call this to our camp.
Attorney General's review of the
deed restrictions, and we actually received those comments from the AG's office on Friday, and we are now updating the deed to incorporate their changes. So we are anticipating we'll finalize that those documents this week.
Are we going to see that again?
Yeah, we'll send it around to the council as soon as we're finalized with those documents.
It'll be released in the public at the same
time.
Thank you very much. And we're keeping the pressure on DDT over these definitions.
Well, one of the issues we'll be meeting with DDT on is the delegation of exemption authority in the preservation area to delegate that authority to municipalities. So in part and parcel of that discussion will be the discussion of those exemption issues.
Anyone else?
Yes,
Executive Director's
report. Good morning, all. I'm going to do, as become customary, use a PowerPoint to give you an update on where we are and then take you through the other issues on the agenda. The report will cover a plant informants update to let you know where we are with that work. We'll have a brief look at the Highland Development Credit allocations and the Highland Development Credit Bank update that is going to do with Transfer Development Rights Program. Then the Highlands Redevelopment Area designation for Heath Village, which is a resolution number 8 on your agenda. And finally, we'll talk about a work session that we'll be holding here today in public to look at two issues that are part of plant conformance applications pending before the council, and they are to look at map adjustments and self-identification. So your update on plant conformance. To date, we have received 56 municipal and 5 county submissions. 38 municipal petitions have been deemed complete, and 18 requests for additional information have been sent. So there's been a lot of to and fro working with municipalities and indeed counties. Additional planning area petitions are expected between now and June. I will tell you that a lot of municipalities are interested in the meeting today. They're interested in center designation. Many of those will be planning area municipalities, so they're watching to see the work that the council is doing on these issues, the map adjustment as well. A brief update on the conformance. Again, I might remind you, you see there the preservation area where conformance is mandatory and where conforming petitions were required by law to be submitted to the council December 8th of 2008. Here you see 95% compliance. We have 2 municipalities that have yet to file. And then you see the areas of planning area that have submitted petitions, and 2 municipalities have submitted documents but have not yet done a resolution, so they haven't made a determination as to whether or not they will conform. This one here, Highbridge, with the different lines across it, is a planning area municipality which has decided via ordinance to conform to the regional master plan. They are the first planning area municipality to adopt an ordinance. Now, to remind you of the review process and bring you up to date on where we are, the process after a petition for plan conformance has been deemed complete is that the petition documents are posted on the Highlands Council website for all to review. Within 45 to 90 days, the staff write a draft consistency review and recommendation report. And that is then shared with the municipality or county and goes to them for a review period so they get an opportunity to address any issues they see. After that, it'll come back to the council. We will give public notice, issue a final report to the council's consideration. Now, the public can track the plan conformance process through a plan conformance petition tracking sheet that follows the date the petition is received by the Highlands Council, the date where there's administrative completeness, the consistency review and recommendation report, the municipal and county review period, public notice and public comment period, and the Highlands Council meetings to review petitions. This council from the very beginning has always instructed the staff to be as transparent as possible and to share all information with the public, and so the staff designed a tracking sheet, and I'm showing you what it looks like here on the website, available already for anyone who's interested. So they can see the municipality, they can see the date by which certain information is received when they're deemed complete, And this goes on as an arrow up here to show you when you're using the website that this is one page of the document and that it continues. And where you see this at the end, this is where the information is already on the website, the documents pertaining to these particular municipalities. So having checked all the dates, you can then click on any particular municipality. So for example, this is Marwa. You click on that, and you get in to see all the documents. Now, we did make sure we showed the size of these documents. Some of them are very large, so that I would avoid printing, and in some cases, consider the time it takes to download. But again, they're all there. We've divided them up into the different, like the cover letter, the petition submittal checklist, preservation area resolution, planning area resolution, the ERI. All of these elements are then posted. So this, again, is in order to make sure that we share with the public, with the municipalities, with all interested parties, all the information on plan performance so that they may track it.
Well, indicated that the zip file showing the size of the zip file.
Yes, but that's a zip file, and then underneath you can see the different elements, the different stuff that are in those files. And so you can click on them down here and open up different ones. This is the zip file, so you click on it and you'll see all the...
The
32 megabytes is the size of the zip file. Correct. Okay, so just a quick update on the Highlands Development Credit Allocation, hardship determination, and the HDC grant update. So with the timeline given for HDC allocation from the past, I'm reminding you that the hardship determination public notice was given, and the HDC Highlands Development Credit Estimator tool, which is a web-based tool to allow for residentially zoned properties to get a range of what the credits might be for that particular property if they wanted to be to enter into the program. That was launched in November of last year. The HDC, the Highlands Development Credit Allocation applications for first round hardship consideration were due by March 15, 2010. The Highlands Development Credit Allocations and Hardship Determinations were then worked on by the staff. The timeline for issuing certificates for Highlands Development Credits is as follows. Public notice was given in February 2010. The Highlands Development Credit Certificate Application for First Round Hardship Considerations was due April 15th, which is today. And May 6th of this year, the Bank Board is meeting, and they will rank those hardship applications according to the Highlands Development Credit Bank's established priorities, and then letters of offer to purchase HDCs and deeds of easement, if accepted by the landowners, will then be issued. So that brings you up to date. Now, we'll keep you up to date on the process of where we are when we get closer to that May date. Here is the status of what we received to date. We received 16 Highlands Development Credit allocation applications through April 5th. Now, one of those applications was for property in the planning area, so that's ineligible for consideration at this time. The owner knows that, and so it's withdrawn that application. Of the 15 applications for property in the preservation area, 9 applications sought to be reviewed under the hardship criteria established by the Highlands Council and the Highlands Development Credit Bank. To date, 4 of those applications have satisfied the hardship criteria. We have written back to landowners. They may submit some more information if they wish to dispute the hardship criteria issue. 1 application sought review under the Highlands Act priority for just missing to qualify for exemption number 3. That was a requirement that we prioritize those. And that application did demonstrate that it qualifies for priority. 11 applicants have received an allocation letter from the Highlands Council. Others were still working on, some of those were commercial. 10 of the properties receiving an allocation of Highlands Development Credit of those 11. The 11th property did not receive an allocation because it has a prior deed restriction that already severed any development potential.
Just a question, what's the time frame that we establish for hardship qualification when it's close to the, relating to Exemption 3, was it one month or 60 days. You're saying just the middle. Exemption 3 was the date you had to have certain approvals in place by March 29th, right?
Yeah.
So how many days out?
There is no set day. You either qualify for exemption 3 or you did not. And so the statute specifies that if you didn't have one of those DEP permits, which is one of the exemption criteria, then that would qualify you for almost meeting exemption 3. So it's not based on whether or not you had the permit or not.
So
it's
project that was in motion.
Had local approvals, exactly. So it has everything but say one DEP or allocation permit or one permit. And the fact that they didn't have that one permit means they didn't need that exemption.
Which allows it then to be
priority consideration.
Jamie, what's the primary
overseas
primary reasoning cited for the
hardship designation? Primarily, it's either bankruptcy, personal bankruptcy, or some major medical condition which is requiring them to have medical warrants or something to that effect. But essentially, the hardship criteria is there's a major issue of financial concern that was resulting from out of that.
Moving on now, we'll be moving up to back onto the agenda, Acting Chairman, to the consideration of the resolution for the Highland Sea Development Area. Certainly. The resolution before you is the resolution for designation of a Highlands Redevelopment Area for Heath Village Retirement Community. Again, I'll use a PowerPoint to show you maps, again, we can share the information with the public as well. The Highlands Act provides relief for redevelopment areas for any area identified as positive and for possible redevelopment would either be a brownfield site designated by the Department of Environmental Protection or a site at which at least 70% of the area is existing impervious surface. In the case of the Heath application, we're looking at an area that has 70% of impervious surface, and so the designation would allow for up to 30% more impervious surface. A waiver of any provision of a Highlands permitting review on a case-by-case basis can be applied then for through the department for redevelopment in those Highlands redevelopment areas, and also the Highlands Council offers relief from the regional master plan to allow for the redevelopment to occur. Heath Village is a senior living campus with assisted living and inpatient care facilities. It's located in Washington Township in Morris County. It consists of several contiguous parcels within the preservation area, block 20, lots 56, 57, 58, 72, and 74, totaling 164 acres. The proposed redevelopment area is located entirely within one of those lots, lot 72, an area of 53 acres. The applicant is petitioning the Highlands Council for a Highlands redevelopment area designation using that 70% existing impervious surface criteria. Here is a map of the subject area. Now there's some issues regarding the actual block and lot numbers, but what this does is shows you the boundaries of the area we're talking about. All of these areas contained within this area here. So all of these block lots, and here you see the development here, the stops here for there. So around this and these other blue areas. So this is the existing area. The yellow line shows you the redevelopment area. If you approve it, would be everything contained within the yellow area. So you can see the existing impervious surface. And these would be proposed buildings that would be constructed as part of this redevelopment project. Many of the buildings indeed date back to the 1960s, so there is a need to replace those buildings and construct new buildings in order for this to be maintained as a viable place for senior citizens to live and also for economic viability. The proposed redevelopment activities include raising 8 existing residential structures and replacing them with 4 new buildings, and constructing four new one-story units to replace an existing single-family home. The construction and associated disturbance will occur over areas that have been previously disturbed, many of which are considered impervious. No disturbance is proposed of the natural resources that exist on the site. Again, here you see the site layout. You see again within the yellow is what we're talking about as the redevelopment area. This was a particularly complex one because of the scattered nature of the building. And here in the red you see the areas for new development or redevelopment. And this is the site plan for the East Village application. And again, you can see the new building. The staff analysis of the proposed redevelopment petition shows the following information. Existing impervious surface is calculated as nearly 637,000 square feet. So the allowable redevelopment area is 909,197 square feet, and that is indeed what the applicant is seeking. Two buildings encroach into previously disturbed piles of open water bottles. Building D will be entirely within an already disturbed Highlands open water buffer with approximately 70 feet of the buffer remaining. A waiver would be required from the Highlands Council in the Highlands Redevelopment Area approval and NJDET through the Highlands Preservation Area approval process for these issues. Because remember, this is a two-step process. The Highlands Council designates the redevelopment area and grants some relief from the regional master plan, and then goes to the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection for Highlands Preservation Area approval and appropriate waivers. Here you see a map showing those Highlands open water buffers, and you can see the two buildings we're still talking about here and here in previously disturbed areas. Jim Huxleman on our staff engineer did the work on this project and assured me that the runoff from the roof of this building here is being captured in a recharge basin over here, so from here to here, so as to make sure there was not runoff into the wetland area. That kind of information was taken into consideration. The comment period on the draft staff report and draft consistency determination closed April 6th of 2010. And as is our practice, what we do is we put the information on the website, we take public comment, and any revisions are shown in track changes so people can see where their comments were taken into consideration. And those materials you have in your packet for you. Three public comments were received, including one from the applicant. One commenter wanted the Highlands Open Water Buffer and Water Deficit Mitigation Plan to be available for public review and comment prior to council hearings. The applicant's comment stated that the buffer mitigation recommendations should be less restrictive to allow for flexibility during design and permitting. The staff recommendation report and our consistency determination were revised to correct factual updates regarding the screen classification. It is a C1 screen classification, plant maintenance, not C2 designation. So we made that factual correction. And then the planned method of recharge for building D roof runoff, and to clarify the buffer recommendation language. The revised staff recommendation report and consistency determination were posted on the council website April 8th of this year. The staff recommendation to the council is to approve the proposed Highlands Redevelopment Area designation subject to the following conditions. That the applicant would develop a Highlands open water buffer mitigation plan to mitigate potential impacts from building D to the wetlands and associated buffer. The mitigation may include buffer enhancement of the adjacent detention basin with a vegetated filter strip, enhancements to the riparian buffer along the stream corridor, or other similar means. Any mitigation plan must be approved cooperatively by the Highlands Council and Department of Environmental Protection. The mitigation plan must also be maintained in perpetuity with appropriate deed restrictions. And that, in a sense, goes to answer that previous comment about providing those plans prior to the council hearing. We don't do that because this goes through a DEP process as well. they haven't gotten the relief yet from DEP, those plans will then be drawn up, and they will have to be approved by both the Council and the Department of Environmental Protection. And there is a process down at the DEP as well for going through the HPAA with waiver. Also, as part of the recommendation, is that the applicant mitigate the additional consumptive water demand, which would be consistent with the regional master plan. It would be on-site recharge at 125% of the demand. The applicant has proposed utilizing rooftop runoff pitch recharge basins to satisfy this requirement, which should be incorporated into their stormwater management plan. The remainder of Block 20, Lot 56, 57, 58, 72, and 74, outside of the proposed Highlands redevelopment area, would be deed restricted to prevent future development, and that the deed restriction would recognize any existing easements for access to water tower and for implementation of potential forest stewardship plans. The construction of sewer lines and laterals within the Tier 1 wellhead protection area must prevent exfiltration of untreated sewage into groundwater. An example there given by Jim would be using PVC pipes with the vital gas system water pipe joints tested to HMUA standards for exfiltration. And the project would be designed to incorporate low-impact development techniques and other SDM best management practices where feasible, including stormwater management techniques and non-structural measures to maximum extent feasible. Natural hydrology and vegetation should be used to the maximum extent possible to achieve required stormwater performance targets. So that brings us to the end of the redevelopment application for that designation as a redevelopment site for East Village Retirement Community. And I believe, Treasurer, in the absence of the acting chair, that you take over the management of the meeting.
I get a motion this.
I have a motion.
A second.
Okay.
Discussion by the council.
Yes, I have a couple questions. The tributary, the C1 tributary, is it named? Do we know the name of that tributary?
No, unnamed.
It is, okay. To the left hand corner. Also, can you review for us the force of our recommendations to DEP in terms of the mandatory nature of our recommendations to DEP on that? These various conditions.
We try to work in coordination with departments so that we don't surprise them with these redevelopment area designations. So what we've been doing with them is having three meetings with CDP, and we've done to date, I remember the three or four, we've previously done three of these, and this will be the fourth. And each time we've met with the department in advance to make sure that they're comfortable with this, because it is up to them as to whether or not they will waive 7.38 the Highlands rules and rents for the preservation area. So we don't dictate to them. However, in order to make sure that the applicant is set up for success, we work in advance with the department.
But in terms of the conditions, for instance, when these various, I see a lot of work has been done to try to minimize the impact on the resources. Mm-hmm. But there are many areas where this is going to come to the YMP. And so I can see things improved as it went along, and protecting the forest resource area, for instance, and changing configurations. But in terms of these conditions, how mandatory are they? I mean, how have we made out so far with DEP on the three different
Our recommendations are mandatory because the Highlands redevelopment site designation is conditioned upon meeting these mandatory conditions.
Mm-hmm. Arguably, DEP could be more stringent, because they have to grant waiver relief and put into their regulations, so they could make a final arguably that the waiver is not appropriate in certain instances.
Okay. I do have some concerns. I mean, this is obviously a very sensitive area. We have streams and wetlands, highlands of the water, we have the forest resource area, intrusion into the C1 buffer. I know it's already disturbed, but it's adding additional disturbance where it's going to be allowing for that more impervious cover on a site that's already in a very sensitive area. Also, the the conservation priority area, the critical wildlife habitat. It's in a water deficit watershed. We're using 100, I know we're trying to meet the 125%. I don't see a real analysis of to guarantee that the 125% through these recharge or making the infiltration basins and these recharge features to equal that 125%. I don't see the specificity here that I would expect, and I always get concerned when I don't see that. Have they done perk testing? See if they really can infiltrate that much water. How much water do they have they calculated? Does it actually equal 125%? Also, the groundwater recharge area, that's good. The karst is dangerous, and I see that, there was work done to try to make sure that the karst area is not, just using low flat, not deep recharge areas. That effort was made not to have karst implications and the problems that are associated with that. The wellhead protection area, I'm concerned. I don't see any sort of leak detection system. I understand about trying to make the pipes, watertight, and those recommendations I'm sure are good. There are reports out of USGS that it's almost impossible to make these pipes not leak. So I am concerned about being within a tier one. It's not tier two or tier three. It's an actual tier one. So it's the most sensitive area around that wellhead that serves that very site with untreated sewage. We should have leak detection. And I think that would be key. It needs to be monitored to make sure we know what's going on under the ground. Otherwise, it's out of sight, out of mind. We don't see it through that pollution problem in the water. So I have a lot of concerns. I know these are previously disturbed areas how disturbed? And I agree that turf and lawn and the, repeated mowing of an area that's lawn really makes it almost impervious. And I agree with that. However, we also have a goal of trying to restore as much as possible these very sensitive areas. And so I understand they want to raise the old buildings and they want to get modern. Is there a way they can get more modern and having a more conservative approach in the areas that do encroach on that 200-foot buffer? I'm very concerned about that and the Highlands Open Water intrusions, as well as the not specific way that they're going to address the 125%.
I could ask our engineer, Jim Huffman, if there's anything he wants to respond to and is ready to respond to at this point in time. Jim, is there anything in particular you could add on
Well, I could address specifically the ground recharge.
I'm talking about the ground and the engineer. Jim is our staff engineer who did the work on this project.
Good morning. I can address specifically the concern with the groundwater recharge. From a feasibility standpoint, I did ask that the applicant submit recharge data. It's used the New Jersey groundwater recharge spreadsheet, which is typically used for engineers doing stormwater management plans. It addresses whether the feasibility, they have enough impervious area to generate the runoff, and whether the soils and the land cover have enough recharge to accept that recharge, and it helps them design those basins. So the applicant did use that to design and size up the area, and the contributing areas he would need to supply that recharge. And I verified those calculations. That's pretty much what's done at this level during a planning board hearing or at a design stage. And the applicant at this stage typically wouldn't do on-site permeability testing. We don't ask that. We don't require it. But from a feasibility standpoint, I did review those calculations. I asked for them, and I verified.
Can you use a model to do that?
The New Jersey groundwater spreadsheet. It's based on the GSR 32.
Right.
This is the standard practice
right.
For
I'm familiar with the spreadsheet, and I know that's the customary way to do it. Of course, you know that model is not exactly applicable to our geology, particularly in this area.
Right. And I will say, when the applicant does do the stormwater management plan for design, they will do percolation tests. They will have to size the basin, the depth, based on actual field data. This was more of a review to see whether this is feasible, and I was satisfied that they would be able to achieve that.
Okay. And then if they do the perk test and they find out, for instance, or the permeability testing, that, you know, they're really just not going to be able to accomplish it, what happens then?
They would have to modify their design, where at that point they would come back to us and we would probably look at perhaps other ways to satisfy the mitigation requirement.
Would this be done at the DEP waiver level, or when in the approval process would this happen?
The HPAA process is much more refined than the council mm-hmm. consideration of the designation of the Rouge Valley area. The Highland permit process is extensive in that you have essentially fully designed the project, go through an extensive public comment period. DEP has not issued any of the previously approved council redevelopment areas yet, but that will go through a full design and public process.
So they do permeability testing at that point, do you know?
In order to design their stormwater management plan, yes, they would need to do
that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. The applicant is here and the engineer is here. I will let you know that.
Any other questions or comments on this?
Yes, I have a question. My question is, the, if I'm understanding this right, the blue area outlined in blue is part of this process that will not be affected.
They are going to deed restrict that in perpetuity except for access to the water tower that you see in existence there, and they could force through forest management.
No,
but that will be deed restricted.
Is the deed restriction a conservation easement specifically, or, you know, what kind of a restriction is it? Conservation easement is pretty formal, and it's pretty hard to mess with.
Conservation easement.
But it would allow forest management and qualification for foreign land assessment.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Any other questions from council members? Well, before there's a resolution, the question is whether the Highland County can approve the redevelopment area designation with conditions for the state forest.
Never
answer my phone again. Okay, in that case, let's go to the public. Any members of the public here to comment on this? Seeing none?
Thank you. My name is Dave Pfeiffer. I'm Highlands Project Director for the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. I don't have a particular comment with regard to this project, although I am preparing comments about the subject of the way karst is being treated in your reviews. And this project is a very interesting situation in that there is limestone carbonate rock beneath this facility, and that's what we learned from looking at your maps, your RMP maps. What we don't learn is what kind of limestone is it, what condition is it in, is it prone to sinkholing? Are there fractures or faults in the area? And in poking around in other data sources, I was able to determine that, first of all, the limestone here is called a Lightsville limestone, which is quite subject to solutioning and dissolving. Sinkholes are quite prevalent in that formation. The applicant stated that because of the deep overburden, the soil and rock that's on top of that limestone, it's not a matter of terrible concern, and that they have had other borings done in the area which indicated no problem. And that's fine. I don't have any reason to disagree with the objective facts that were presented, but it's highly unlikely that that boring program or those borings were actually a boring program to define the quality of the limestone.
also quite unlikely that we should hand wave away places that are deeply covered with soil from the threat of sinkholes. What happens when a sinkhole opens under deep overburden is very different than when it happens over shallow overburden. In shallow overburden situations, you get a very narrow hole at the surface. Just imagine the bottom falling out of something that's only 5 feet deep. It's only going to be a little hole. But when that overburden is very deep, 40 or 50 feet, that hole is going to be very large at the surface. It just has to be because the soil, the angle of repose of the soils is such that they'll slide to a certain angle. So areas of deep overburden are maybe more concerning than areas of shallow overburden. The other thing involved here is that there is a fault, which you can find on the DEP mapping, but not on your mapping, that runs right up the eastern side of the buildings, right down at the limit of the redevelopment area. And that's known as the Muscadet Pond Thrust Fault. And at that place, the older rock, which is the ridge to the east, has been pushed over that younger rock. And those places are very likely to develop a solutioning between the two rock units, very good places to form caves. So that should give you some concern about what goes on the top, how you're handling your stormwater. And then finally, the issue of the groundwater beneath the site, I think you could infer, because of the permeability of the soils at the base of that ridge and the presence of that fault, that you have a rapid recharge area for the limestone aquifer under the rest of the valley. We found this time and again, that these valley walls are the prime recharge areas for these limestone aquifers. So there's all of that. There's a similar pattern of analysis at Borealis, which you've already improved. There's an example of a sinkhole just opening in Mansfield Township, which took 5 truckloads of cement to close. And there are numerous other examples of sinkhole problems in the Highlands region and Phillipsburg area, for example, that are relatively recent. So I want to bring this matter to you and to your staff in a coherent way. I don't want to tie it to this project, but as an object lesson in how to review cars. So that's about what I can say today. Would that I had time to put that all together for the comments on this one, but I think if we look at getting better in our practice, we can get somewhere better, but only if we look.
So, Wilma Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I did submit a comment earlier in writing that was about the C1 waters, but what I'd like to focus on today is the recommendation that the project, that the remainder of the project be deed restricted. And I think in concept, yes, that's absolutely good, and I'd be very pleased to see those large tracts deed restricted. But I think there needs to be something in the language that the holder of the deed restriction needs to be identified before the project moves forward. And I personally would recommend that it not be the municipality. As in my experience, municipalities do not monitor their deed restricted properties. We have seen cases in Vernon Township where a planning board restricted a parcel of land, along with, they had a development, they clustered, they restricted it,
And then somehow the deed was lost, the town didn't know about it, and about 10 years later, the town was ready to approve new development in the deed-restricted portion. And NJCF sued on that. I believe we did win, but I think that the deed restriction should be identified, the holder should be identified before this moves forward. And I know this is a difficult issue. I know NJCF has a task force of people working on how to deal with conservation restrictions and everything, and I'm not a part of that, so I can't, you know, inform you about what kinds of conclusions people have reached at this point. But I do think it's a really big issue, particularly since we're going to be wanting to have as many conservation restrictions in the Highlands as possible. Thank you.
David Schultz, I have a farm in Lebanon Township. What's lost in the shuffle here is this is a place where old people go. It's very often their last stop. And I have not heard any discussion about what the additional layers of bureaucracy and costs associated with it really add up to. Here you're asking the applicant to give up a huge swath of property outlined in blue so they can rebuild on a tiny portion of the property outlined in red. It's extortion, I guess the technical legal name for it is exaction. I call it extortion. I would like to hear, and I don't know if the applicant can provide this information or not, but exactly how much, or even on the approximation, how much dealing with you and the DEP has cost additionally. These costs will be passed on to the residents of this facility. It will be another tax on old people who reside in East Village. That's what it will be. You blithely go through a whole bunch of stuff worrying about wildlife and karst and all kinds of other junk as an excuse, really, to get your hands on the area outlined in blue, extract it from the owners so that they can rebuild in the areas outlined in red. This plan was approved in 2004 by Washington Township. My understanding is they came here in 2005. It's now 2010. What is there? It's the marination period is essentially the same as you had for Borealis. It's just sort of sit up here and stew for 5 years before you get to it. I would suspect if it weren't for the change of administration in Trenton, it would continue to marinate up here. You right now are endeavoring to do something because for 5 years you've done essentially nothing except steal value from the property owners and the planning and preservation areas. The applicant is prepared to give a guess as to what this additional layer of bureaucracy costs. I'd love to hear it. Thank you.
My name is Deborah Post, Chester Township. This project is a dense cluster housing. Exactly what all the planning philosophy that Mr. Pulsanfield and George actually advocates in housing, which you're supposed to be approving. This is also housing for the elderly. Like the working class, the non-rich elderly are segments of the population that you want run out of the Highlands. I am familiar with Heath Village. My grandmother died there. You should not be district this land. You should allow them to expand and provide the excellent care that they do to a segment of our population that needs it, probably more than the East needs your water. Thank you.
Anyone else?
barring incompetence of municipalities, it's a very effective technique to have the municipality have a deed restriction join the nonprofit, because deed restriction is then enforceable in municipal court. You're able to move quickly in the event that something's happened, not having to wait for the state to move, if that's the holder of the conservations. So in some cases, it's very important. It's also important that the municipalities be partner in the deed restriction, because there's going to be a change, such as the Department of Transportation negotiates a change in deed restriction. The municipality has to be involved in that process. It can't take place behind closed doors and traffic. So I would just add those comments.
I'd like to follow up on that, because going back to history, I know that there have been cluster zoning approvals where the vacant land was not properly registered with the restrictions on it, and somehow if you couldn't buy it, then you might be developed as well, because there's no proof of the restrictions. So, you know, we have to have a way to follow up to make sure that these are properly filed with the county clerk.
Any other members? Any call a question? Roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Olmstead?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
No.
Councilmember Cava?
Yes.
Councilmember Francis?
Yes.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Yes.
Councilmember Kovach?
Yes.
Councilmember Lett?
Yes.
Councilmember Richco?
Yes.
Councilmember Vetrano?
Yes.
Councilmember Fizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Schreier?
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen. For your attention and really just for this.
The only comment is that we're delighted that we have an 8-to-1 book. Thank you.
10-to-1.
10-to-1.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we are now in something a little different for a work session. I don't remember the last time we had
it. Then the developer said something
called
a
beautiful
master plan.
We're going to be discussing plan performance issues for potential map adjustments for a Comanche Township and a potential center designation for Ireland Township.
And I would like to acknowledge that Mayor Kovach is here from Byron Township, and the chairman from the planning board is also here. And I want to acknowledge their presence here and their professionals who've been working with us in the case of Byron, and in fact, professional people have come as well. Okay, first, just to put this in context, we have of course received many petitions for plan conformance, and as part of those petitions, we requested that municipalities let us know if they want to address any issues pertaining to RMP updates, so the regional master plan update. That is factual information whereby we take that information, verify it, and then make factual corrections to any of our mapping layers. Then there are the map adjustment process, which are policy changes to the land use capability map and must be approved by council in a public process. And finally, center designations, which are areas to recognize where growth has already occurred and areas potentially for future growth as well, and those centers must be approved by the council. So just to go back and to differentiate between map updates and map adjustments, the regional master plan is of course created at a regional scale, and the updates provided an opportunity for the council to get new, updated or additional information to make sure that we stay current. We work in partnership with municipalities and counties to make sure that we have the best available information. So we have shared with them much of this went on during the build-out process, where we shared with the municipalities everything we knew about them at block and lot level, and their professionals verified that information and gave us, in many instances, correction for that. We're following this up now through the performance process to make those updates. And this is consistent with policy 61 in our plan to develop that program for those updates. And we want to show you what that looks like. So on the map here, you see a slide showing you Lebanon Borough. And you see Route 78 and Route 22 here on the slide. And these areas here were captured at the time we did our regional master plan as protection zone, because we were seeing them as forested areas. But since then, there's been a fully developed area here, and these two areas were cleared and have approvals for future development. And in fact, we know that this site was a builder's remedy. A lawsuit was filed here, and there has been construction at this site. So getting the information from the municipality, we verified the information, and these areas are no longer shown as protection zone, they're shown as an existing community. And just finally, because that one site, the aerial view is the most current available on the website, still shows this corner as forested, and this is actually what's there. So those are decisions that are made by, rather saying decisions, responses by staff. You have authorized staff to verify the information and make some factual corrections to the map. Those corrections don't always result in change to land use capability zone map. In some instances they do, but certainly certain layers of the map can be corrected. It might be a piece of land that has been preserved that we didn't capture as preserved, so we update our map. We're also working on a web-based interface to allow municipalities to keep us current with changes. So, for example, if a town went out and did some farm preservation, they could let us know through the website. We would verify that information and make those corrections. That's the ongoing plan to make sure we stay current. So those are what those RMC updates look like. To date, those updates have primarily addressed recent construction, clearing, new open space purchases, and that kind of information. Many of them were identified, as I said, during the build-out process, and we've been verifying them at block and lot level. And many of them then, as we go through the plan conformance process. We will be tracking and posting all of those on our website as well, so people can follow them and see what we're doing. Now that brings us to the other process, which is the map adjustment process, which really is a policy call and can only be decided by the Highlands Council as part of a public process. So in this work session, what we want to do is take you back again, put it in context. The map adjustments are issued to address these policy issues, and it is again consistent with the regional master plan. Objective 6G2B talks about map adjustments and talks about criteria that you've established in order to judge these. In particular, I draw your attention to what is in bold on the slide, is that a map adjustment should address results in no net loss of Highlands resources or resource values, including but not limited to water availability, water quality, critical habitat, and agriculture within the region or as appropriate within any HUC 14 sub-watershed. So that's one of the most important criteria you put forward. You also, in the regional master plan, looked at other issues, and obviously none should result in allocation of water or wastewater capacity in excess of what's available at a HUC 14 level. We look first to see if somebody comes in for map adjustment, could it be addressed in another manner, such as a waiver under the Highlands Act or an exemption or indeed an update. So once we've reviewed those, then it goes to be considered as an adjustment. We want again to draw your attention to the last bullet on this slide, that the Council in the Regional Master Plan said that they would look most favourably upon existing community zone petitions. So that would be a petition for map adjustment to go from another zone to existing community zones, if that adjustment would create a meaningful opportunity to provide affordable housing, improve the balance of housing and employment, and promote the use of alternative modes of transportation and transit. So that's just a look back at the context of what we're looking today at and considering the regional master plan. Numerous map adjustments were proposed in the petitions for plan conformance, looking to adjust the land use capability zone map. So, as an example, what we want to focus on today is perhaps Howard Township petition, which includes the request for map adjustments. The township is seeking to conform for the planning area, as well as the preservation area, which of course is mandatory, for their township. However, in order not to jeopardize the township's substantive certification from the Council on Affordable Housing, they are requesting a map adjustment to address a court-ordered affordable housing project where sewer capacity has been specifically reserved. The 8,792 acre township has got 86% in the preservation area and 14% in the planning area, and the map adjustment is in the planning area. Here you see a slide that shows you Coatcombe Township. This is the outline of the township. In the center of here you can see Alta Borough, and the planning area is shown here in white. You can see developed areas here through from Phillipsburg and a little bit of Coatcombe into Alta Borough. The project area is block 93, lots 4 and 5. It's a total of 170 acres. Currently on our map it's shown as, in the landscape and zone map, as conservation environmentally constrained subzone. The property is currently leased with mostly road crop corn production. The project area includes agricultural resource area, carbon rock, critical habitat, Highland Upland Water Buffers, Tiers 1, 2, and 3 wetland protection areas, and TMDL compliance. The project is in the township's affordable housing zoning district, and is the product of prior round affordable housing litigation, and is a key component of the township's current affordable housing plan, and remains under court jurisdiction. The project received preliminary subdivision and site plan approval for both parcels, which would have permitted the creation of 401 single-family lots, two apartment buildings containing a total of 44 low and moderate income affordable units, and one lot for future retail use. The project would be served by an extension of sewer and water utilities, representing 152,550 gallons per day of wastewater demand from Phillipsburg. And it required a New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection wastewater quality management plan amendment, and that came before the council previously. And we'll look back at that in a moment. And these maps just show you, there's the two lots in question. Here you see again Coatcombe, and you see Alta Borough here. The yellow that you see on this map is impervious surface. And you recall the Highland Act says that the growth should be in or adjacent to already developed areas. So these are the two lots in question. It shows you land use capability zone, agricultural priority area. You can see it here because as we see it, it is under agricultural production that is used. Here you see open water buffers, a little bit of it up here. It's a little difficult to see the buffers, the blue here. And you see wetland protection areas from Alta Borough going to Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3. Critical wildlife habitat and carbonate rock pretty much overlays the site, and it's also known as alpha grassland for habitat. Here's a closer look at it. Again, you can see this is an aerial underneath the land use capability zone map. You see all of this is existing community because of the developed nature, and this is a conservation zone, again, because it's open agricultural land. This was the site as you saw it when you were considering a consistency with the regional master plan in terms of the wastewater quality management plan amendment. This was what you saw. These are the two sites. You see the developed areas for that 401 single family lots of two apartment buildings, which have 44 affordable units, and one lot for future retail. It would have resulted in 81% of developed land and 19% undeveloped, which is here, it's the buffer to this waterway here. That would have been the area that was undeveloped. And looking again, here you can see the carbonate rock and critical habitat. It would have disturbed 81% of the carbonate rock area and 83% of the critical wildlife habitat want to let you know that this is under review by the Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. We have been working with them on this application back in the past and now currently as well. Looking at the wellhead protection areas, 100% disturbed tier 1, 84% tier 2, and 73% of tier 3. That is the application as you saw it in the past. Here is the results of your findings back about a year and a half ago when you examined that plan for consistency with the regional master plan. The extension of utilities across the full property was not associated with cluster. In the conservation zone, the regional master plan requires clustering to protect 80% of the land, allowing the developed portion on the 20% of the land. Obviously, it didn't. It was not consistent in that manner. Water availability constraints. At that period of time, we were looking at that as a concern about water availability. Stormwater recharge and design concerns over karst topography, concerns about threatened and endangered habitat, of TMDL for pathogens and water conservation measures, water quality issues, and wellhead protection areas. These were the concerns, and your determination was that the project was not consistent with the regional master plan. The project, it has been revised considerably, and I'll show you how in a few moments with maps, but just to show you in terms of your previous findings. The revised project provides 73.5% open space land, remembering that your requirement for consistency in the cluster was 80%, hence you're getting a request for a regional master plan update because they couldn't achieve the 80%. They've gotten as far as 73.5%. In terms of the water availability constraints, prior to this, looking at this analysis for the map adjustment, the Highlands Council staff had reported out to you before on a regional master plan update, again, factual information that we had done regarding this area, regarding water availability in the area. We had shown this area as in deficit, but having done a study, see that it is hydrologically connected to the Delaware, and thus the water availability constraint has been updated, and it is no longer seen to be an area in deficit. For stormwater recharge and design concerns, now low-impact development is required, and the Department of Environmental Protection and Regional Master Plan stormwater best management practices required. For the karst topography, they've been working with USGS, and for MJGS on the geotechnical site investigations, and they are required to be done. Critical habitat conservation management plan has to be implemented and the open lands be restricted. Stream corridor restoration plan must be done and utility lines must be watertight. The project design has been significantly revised in response to your September 23rd consistency review of the wastewater quality management plan amendment. As now proposed, it would have 242 residential units, still including those 44 affordable units to be de-restricted for low and moderate income households. 122 would be single family homes and 76 townhomes. There is now no future retail use considered in this project. The wastewater flow has been reduced by 82,800 gallons per day. The project now proposes 45 acres of development as compared to the 170 acres you were looking at as previously locally approved. The remaining 125 acres, which is at 73.5% to be de-restricted, preserved as open space. Space can be used for agricultural purposes, contingent on a farm conservation plan to protect grassland species. That would achieve the target of providing no net loss of critical habitat, which again is your requirement under the regional master plan. The proposed map adjustment involves approximately 40 acres of land, so you're not being asked to make a map adjustment for the 170 acres, but only for the developed portion. And I'll show you a map of what that looks like in a moment. It's 40 acres in the northwestern corner and an additional 5 acres in the southeastern corner of the two blocks and lots. And the municipality is seeking to have an adjustment from that land use capability zone map from conservation zone subzone existing the constrained, environmentally constrained to existing community zone. The remaining portion, of course, would remain as conservation environmentally constrained subzone. So just going to show you, there's the proposal before you now. I told you about that 40 acres that's up here, and here's the 5-acre portion down here. And I've gone over the numbers. This would be a cluster approach, 26% developed land, 74% undeveloped. And then obviously the reduced projected wastewater flow. Again, looking at it in terms of critical habitat and in terms of carbon loss, you see much less disturbance of the area. This would all be restricted from what was previously approved, which would have been the disturbance of really the entire site, with the exception of the water buffer in there. This is the tier 1, 2, and 3 of the wellhead protection area. So you can see again that previously you had really full disturbance around here, limited disturbance here for the portion of the 5 acres of the site. So it's that 73% here, so you can see the disturbance is in here, a small portion of tier 2 and none of tier 3. So that brings us to the end of the map adjustment, your consideration of that. And now you don't have, there's no formal action required today because this is part of a plan conformance application. But this was to give the council an opportunity to consider this because it will become part of a lot of different applications coming before you. And it's your first opportunity to discuss a map adjustment and see what's going to be in action. And from the Powhatan's perspective, it's important for them because obviously it's their fair share plan depends on this, and it would be their planning area position for conformance that would be affected by this map adjustment request.
So despite the fact that we have no formal resolution before us, it would be helpful for the applicant to understand where the council might be inclined to be on this issue, whether they're
leaning toward it or leaning against it or
something
of that nature? Yes, whatever you want to do. I guess, the ratio on affordable housing, so if you have 198 homes, all you're doing is merely offsetting your development responsibility for that development. This is mandated. I'm a little confused as to what their other round three obligation would be and how this is cutting into, you know, reducing that. If you just simply go out and add 200 houses and you put 40 affordable homes in, you're net zero. You haven't done anything on your affordable housing obligation prior to that development.
This is a prior round obligation that was a result of the Montgomery litigation. We're acting under closed jurisdiction now, but there is a court master overseeing this. The court ordered that sewer capacity be reserved for this project, and actually DEP ordered that other areas served in Quahatcha be pulled back out of the sewer service area. So this has been a long-standing litigation in terms of addressing a prior round obligation, not a third round growth share obligation.
And as the court master is, I would just want to point out, the court master is here today as well.
I have a question on the affordable housing issue. When you submitted for comments, when you talk about development such as this and you take that 70% that's going to be undeveloped and put in conservation, does that take that property out of your inventory for requiring affordable housing? Does that take it off the table? And so yes, it says a double whammy, and so that might help. That might help your question. So now you've taken all that acreage that you're no longer is in your in the mix. And so there's a definite advantage you're doing that.
And then remember that the build out analysis done by the Highlands Council should perhaps conform for the entire municipality. The projections would be then based on the Highlands Regional Master Plan for that affordable housing obligation, which would be based on sustainable development that could have gone into the plan.
I mean, could you go back to the layout?
The last one.
It shows this, but I think it shows the river on the left side. Well, it's okay. My question is, yes, there it is on the left. You can see the Delaware River. Approximately, how close is this development to the river? I know there's a development in between. About a quarter of a mile, or?
Sounds good,
idea. Yeah. You can see it. It concerns me about knowing that development that's so close to the Delaware River. But I see the, you know, the development in between them, but it's
right. Live
on the waterway. Also, my second question is that I think there's 122 single-family homes and 76 townhouses. I'm wondering why they didn't try to have more townhouses instead of single-family homes. They could have the density much more, so they would have reached the 80% instead of 76.5.
I'm not really kind of pointing at the center, and I'm sure there were economics involved in these issues as well, but I mean, I don't know if the professional would like to speak. Patrick Kennedy, the professional planner, is in the room if you'd like to ask.
What
would
the reason
for
the Mr. Gannon single-family homes versus townhouses, which would seem that you would be able to reach that 80%?
Are there any other questions from
Okay. I have a question. I'm concerned about the grasslands, because the grasslands are very important, not just to the Hackhole Township and the region there, but also to the Delaware River. And as we know, there are vanishing habitats. So, again, we have a lot of sensitive features here in this area, in addition to the grasslands. But did anyone do a calculation how much percent of the grasslands in the area is being lost through this?
Anything outside of what was looked at on this particular site,
Ken? No, we haven't, but we certainly could. I think one point that I would make is right now that this part of the grassland, if you will, is corn. And part of the idea behind the critical habitat management plan is to actually make it grassland to improve the habitat for the bird species. So, well, we definitely can look at that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realize a lot of our areas that we're calling grasslands are developing agriculturally right now. It's an easy conversion to, you know, to change from active agriculture to grasslands. Once we, however, build on it, it's impossible to get it back. So my concern is just the ability to restore then and to have a healthy grasslands as well. Completely. Also, I think, you know, the point that was made by Carl, proximity to the river, I think that would be a good distance to know, mainly because we are, you know, working to get established habitat, riparian habitat along the Delaware River as well. And I'd like to know how far this intrudes into that. I realize there's existing development there, but I just buy into the argument that if you have existing development, just pile more on. I know that a lot of work has been done to make this better. This is certainly a lot better than the waterfront and national plan application that we looked at. There's been a lot of progress made, but it still is a permanent impervious surface, highly developed, intense use area. So my concern is, related to that and how that will impact the riparian area for the river as well.
Question. How much of the existing tract is grassland right now?
Pretty much all of it is in corn.
Well, cropland. That's why cropland is different than grassland. So what I don't understand is how do we require this mitigation when there is no... What's the critical habitat in a field of corn?
It's the landscape project mapping is the central habitat. So the landscape doesn't always show all existing habitats as potential habitats. And in this particular case, the alpha grassland is really the state preserved alpha grassland site west of this particular site. But it's well known as an area where there is existing grassland habitat. It's a priority natural heritage site. So it's adjacent to that.
So what you would then, in fact, be requiring is new habitat to be created.
Yeah.
people of somebody thinks that birds are more important than the guy growing corn and making a living. So essentially what's happening then is we're destroying protected viability of farmers. Because somebody somewhere thinks that it's better to have bird habitat there than growing row crops in the deep restricted areas.
I'll go back to your findings when you did the wastewater quality management plan analysis. Was your concern was the threatened endangered habitat? Highlands Council's concern and their finding was inconsistent because of threatened endangered habitat. And your requirement under the regional master plan was a standard of no net loss. And so this is how we applied it.
My point is, if there's, you just said no net loss, but if there isn't any there right now, then there's no net loss because you're not taking away grasslands with this project.
It's the loss of potential habitat under the landscape management.
There's another species that the EPA is examining right now.
Somebody
throw
a hawker along property?
No, it's not a bird.
It's wrong what we're doing here, in my opinion. You know, we shouldn't be forcing people to abandon agriculture to create habitat for a bird, in my opinion. We talk about the importance of maintaining animals, and every time we do these things, we are destroying somebody's potential to make a living. We're taking viable, productive ag land and turning it into bird habitat. Somebody was earning money from that land. And that could have been a critical component of the massive necessity that an operator needed to justify the ownership of a certain amount of equipment and everything else. And the loss of another 100 acres on top of the loss of another 100 acres then takes away the economic viability of the business. And somebody goes out of business of hiring people and employing people and paying taxes and buying equipment and creating infrastructure, and it's all gone. Step by step, keep taken away. This is another example of taking away private enterprise that's making this economy tick in the name of a firm. And it's wrong.
Well, the applicant revised the project in to respond to the Highland Council findings, and then the municipality asked us to consider the map adjustment with that revised application before you, because prior to this revised application, the entire site would have been developed. So if your staff are trying to respond to your prior findings and work with the municipality to achieve a project map adjustment that you would consider.
Mr. Chair, we did argue this out before, and I think, you know, we have the regional master plan, which set these guidelines for us. So I understand, Kurt, you don't agree with the majority, but in this case, we did decide this. So I think, you know, everybody has every right to express their opinion, but it's not, quote unquote, wrong, according to the RMP or the decisions made by the council to protect this threatened and endangered habitat. Also, I'd like to point out that you're losing 45 acres to the housing, and are you concerned about that? You're losing agricultural land to the house, and you're not mentioning that.
It may be a concern, but my bigger concern is right now there was no grassland creating this habitat. If there were 20 acres of habitat that was destroyed because of the development project, I could understand the mitigation of the no-net loss. But we have no habitat right now, so we're creating this habitat. It's smoke and mirrors. It's voodoo economics applied to.
But the definition of habitat is potential habitat, and that's the way we...
Well, there's potential habitat everywhere, and that's just what's wrong with
it. No, but there's not potential habitat where the buildings are. There's potential habitat where agriculture is intruding on that habitat.
That's my point. So every time we do one of these things, agriculture loses, because in the entire highlands, there's potential habitat, and that's what's wrong with the plan. And what's important is other members know it, because this thing will be revised, and there's new members here that weren't here when this plan was originally... approved and considered. Every time agriculture loses, because every time you can, we can do this carb shuffle and say it has potential habitat. Everything has potential habitat.
Well, I can argue that we're also losing to agriculture. We're losing out to agriculture. So in the end, the biggest loser is habitat, because the grasslands are vanishing. And the agriculture could happen, for instance, where the housing is as well. So, I mean, we could argue this forever. We've argued it for years, and we have different opinions. And I think to say it's wrong in your opinion is fine, but it's not wrong according to the guidelines of the RNC that's been adopted by this council and the decisions made on the water quality.
Okay, if it wasn't here at 11 o'clock, it would have been on the Morristown Square at the Tea Party today, because it is time to take things back. And this stuff frustrates me more than anything, and it is wrong. It's offensive and it's wrong. And we have to start thinking about people again. This economy has tanked because we think more about a salamander than we do a human being and their family making a living, and it's wrong. As long as I'm here appointed by the government, you're going to keep hearing this message.
And same for me, Kirk.
And God bless you. Hopefully they'll keep being 10 to 1 votes.
Thank you.
Mr. Banish,
are you interested in
really good by
yourself. Mr. Chairman.
I'm getting a lot of fire.
I'd be happy to offer just a real quick perspective.
And maybe you can answer the question about the proximity to the
government. I didn't measure it, so I can't.
We also have an answer for you in a few moments. We have a question
on the... It's really frustrating for me to sit in the middle of a conversation where I really get both sides of what being said, what the things we just heard. And I'm not here to weigh in on that. I've been the master in this case in Calhoun for, I hate to say it, crushing 10 years. And a 1996 court order called for 529 single-family homes, or 529 units, including the 44 apartments and the rest single-family homes, to be built on the entire property without any purpose of buffer or without anything. In fact, there was a farm ditch and there was an apartment that was really not respected very much at all. The property at the time was zoned for over 1,000 units. I think it was almost 1,100 units. But the by-right zoning, which had remained in place for, I think, decades, permitted on the property. So I think when I came here a year or more ago and spoke with Carmen Eileen about this project and said, you got to understand, after the court order said 10 years ago that this housing was supposed to get built, that this is a different case than other cases. They went through the same process you would go through with any application, and they came up with a series of findings. The applicants went back and addressed those findings. I think what's on the screen right now is the most telling accommodation that can be shown. Because moving from a 50-foot to a 150-foot to a 300-foot buffer around that ditch, which I believe, given the nature of the karst terrain, is a real area of concern, was a smart thing for DEP to be worried about. But in the long run, to have this development all get sort of pushed over into the corner where development is, I believe most of the site undeveloped, and not have to intrude into and mess with all that karst, just seems to me like a real win-win. The fact that the proposer of the development is willing to continue to watch the number of units you road and come up with a plan that seems to be satisfying the environmental concerns tells me we're on the right track here, and I just hope that when you all get a chance to weigh in, that I believe the issue about the alpha grasslands is not a phony issue. I think that we have locations like the Sourland Mountain and certain areas along the river that are uniquely valuable for habitat purposes, and once they're gone, they won't be back. I think, as Mr. Oski said, in this particular case, you've got quite a deal going. And I would ask only that you consider, in the interest of potential farming, whether or not there are agricultural uses that can coincide appropriately so that there could be a continued... I mean, one of the techniques we've seen frequently is that if you time the harvest of a hay field so that you don't cut it before, you know, the middle of July, the end of July, you won't get as much productive agricultural use of the property over the course of the seasons as you might otherwise, but you can sort of multitask the land. I think maybe there's a win-win solution there someplace, but I think what you're seeing on the board there is a long history of working toward something that is a real win-win. I'll answer any questions if you have them, but I mean,
my question was, it seems like we're looking at 198 units all together, 122 single family homes, 76 townhouses. So it was the reasoning for the 122 single family homes compared to the 76 Alley houses. Is that an economic decision by the developer? In other words, it would seem to me that it would be better to put 198 units of townhouses in because the views have less land.
No, we're in a market where the desirability of single-family homes is almost changing in front of us. As the demographics, as the baby boomers keep aging, we're watching what you're saying make more and more sense. This developer came into a project where he had just about 500 single-family homes. They thought they knew what it was they were buying their way into. They still believe that there's a meaningful role for a substantial number of single-family homes, in part because of their profit potential in the deal. I mean, this is not a job where the other 125 acres will get set aside by the developer because they go underwater if that happens. Somebody's got to figure out a way that the open space portion is going to be put into some public domain and put some return on. Otherwise, everything you've seen here can't possibly make sense financially. So I think those single-family homes are in there to help make the residential side of this be more like what they thought they were getting into, more like what they perceived the market to be. But I really can't speak for the developer, and I don't mean to.
I think Chairman is a quarter mile from the gentleman. Thank you to Roger.
This area is all in the planning area?
Yes, it is.
So, they don't really have to have our approval to do this, for that one, right?
They don't have to conform for the planning area. You rendered your decision as up to the Department of Environmental Protection in terms of the wastewater quality management plan.
And this is the WQM.
Yeah, and that's, they can work with the department on that, but this is in terms of conformance for the regional master plan who has our need just for their affordable housing.
But if they didn't want to?
They don't have to.
They don't have to.
They would only conform for their correct. They would conform for their preservation.
But the fact that they are here and that they have worked to get that development constricted the way that they have, they should be commended for that.
I wasn't here for the original part of it, but this is a very good example of smart planning. It makes sense to prevent something, have it revised, and have another presentation. And but the issue I have is that Kurt raised with the agriculture. I think to part of smart planning is look at the big picture overall, and then you refine it down. And I believe that the no net loss idea should also apply to the existing agriculture. Why would you plant it and lose that feature? I think, from my knowledge of farms, I was raised on a farm, birds and animals are pretty adaptable. And so if you're growing crops, they know when to come and eat it and when not. And they know when you're there and they know when there's disturbance. They're not as dumb as people might think they are. And so I don't really have a problem with if we restrict this property, if it's conservation easement, to get a balance of both. And I think maybe some of that smart planning has to be applied to the open area on what the conservation easement addresses. And there's some pretty smart wildlife people also that can work in concert with agriculture. And I believe that needs to be explored. It's not one or the other. It's the world we live in involves both. And so I think that we really need to pursue that. I would be opposed to eliminating agriculture from this site.
As you pointed out, there was a fine settlement that can be developed and argued and discussed as we go forward. I'm looking for some general...
The clustered approach is the right approach. It's done throughout the world. If you look at how planners operate in the rest of the world. They can teach us a few lessons they've adapted in tight places to have cluster development with green areas and really strict conservation easements from Europe specifically. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the farmers have to survive along with the wildlife, and I think that's doable. We've been doing it for centuries. We should continue to do it.
Can I just draw your attention, I'm sorry, to the slides, because I did say this, I know I said a lot. Bullet number 3, the project proposes 45 acres of development as compared to 170 acres as locally approved, with remaining 125 acres preserved as open space, may be used for agricultural purposes contingent on farm conservation plans to protect grassland species. That was our attempt, as Mike said, to be even-handed in this and try to accomplish both, and I think it comports with what the courtmaster said as well.
The only problem is protect grassland species. That's the caveat that changes the whole thing. Because what you're doing is you're prescribing to a would-be farmer that there's only one way that you're going to farm that land, and that's to plant grass that you can only mow at a certain time. And I'll tell you right now, the time you use to mow it deteriorates the quality of the hay to the point where it's not marketable for any type of livestock. It's mulching. So maybe there's value going through the mushrooms down at Kennett Square, but the value, the economic model doesn't work. People don't grow mulching purposely because they can't make a living growing mulching. So you've taken the prosperous agriculture enterprise and you've turned it into one that can't make money. So no one's going to seek to do that. And that's the problem. You said there's no other type of agriculture that can occur except for grass that can only be harvested when we tell you we can harvest it.
Mr. Chairman, you're not willing to bend at all. You're saying you're not going to share at all. I mean, what is being, obviously under number 3, what is being said is there's compatible uses that can provide the habitat for the grasslands as well as have a farm conservation plan in place that will allow for agriculture. So I just find it very interesting that you're talking about other people crowding out agriculture and yet you're not going to bend and make a compatible multiple use here. I mean, that kind of rigid approach makes it so my side has to say, there should be no agriculture. If you're telling me it's incompatible, there's no economic way that you can possibly have compatible use between grassland and corn, I respect your opinion. I would like to see that economic analysis done on paper. I'd like to find out how much money that corn grower is making right now. I'd like to know how much money he's actually going to lose if he tries to put compatible use crop in there. And I think for you to be making these assumptions and throwing out very rigid statements like this works against the goal that we have here. And that goal is to this number 3 goal. So I don't see you're kind of arguing against yourself. You're saying you want agriculture and nothing but agriculture. You're willing to allow 45 acres of housing, but there's no way that a bird can live there.
The only thing that's rigid is the statement in there that says protect grassland species, because that makes the agriculture very rigid. Because I do it for a living, and I do understand how these things work. The only way that you're going to be able to have agriculture that protects these grassland species that someone has identified as being critical to the state of New Jersey and its residents is to plant grassland. If you don't have grassland, you don't protect grassland species. So I let you speak for peace, now you can let me finish. So I didn't create the concept that it has to be grassland. That's what's up there. I'm responding to that. Would I rather it be all farmland? Sure. It's too bad somebody didn't preserve the farmland years ago, but it didn't. This is what's come out. I'd rather see a cluster and some ag than no ag at all. But what I do know, and there's lots of economists down at Rutgers who can back this up, but there's no assumptions here. I understand the economics, that if you're going to prescribe a certain type of agriculture, you've taken away all the flexibility for a producer to grow any crop that they deem as appropriate to make the best living. You're only going to allow one type of agriculture, and it's going to be a prescription, and it's not going to allow somebody to make a living. Now, if we were truly talking about no net loss, and there were existing grasslands that were harboring these birds, where the development is occurring, and we determined that there was 20 acres of grassland there,
I could buy into 20 acres of that cropland being created, being planted into grassland to mitigate for a loss when the development is around. But that hasn't been demonstrated yet to me that that was occurring. What we said is we're going to develop over in this corner, and all the rest of the cropland has to be protected for grassland species. So the other flexibility on my part, the inflexibility is that we're only that somebody is determined that because there's a potential for a grassland bird there, that every acre of that farmland has to be turned into grassland to protect potential environment for these birds.
The general question here is one of map adjustment, The fine details that we're discussing are very interesting and need further elaboration and discussion in my view. So I'd just like to find out who is adamantly opposed to creating a map adjustment.
And the map adjustment is for the 45 acres under the developed portion. It could be a map adjustment for fishing community zone in those two areas where the development is to occur. Moving forward, we want to talk about center designation. Again, this is part of the plan conformance, and the professional planner for that Cohatcom site is Paul Gleason. He's also the professional planner on working for Byron as a consultant on this particular center designation. The Highlands Act anticipates the use of center designations. The Highlands Act talks about encouraging consistent with the State Development and Redevelopment Plan, known as the State Plan, and smart growth strategies and principles, appropriate patterns of compatible residential, commercial, and industrial development, redevelopment and economic growth, and underlined in or adjacent to areas already utilized for such purposes, and discourage piecemeal, scattered, and inappropriate development. In looking at center designation, we were also required under the Act to issue model minimum standards for municipal and county master planning and development regulations outside of the plantation area, including density standards for center-based development, to encourage, where appropriate, the adoption of such standards and provisions for center-based growth. So that's just from the Act itself and Section 11, the content of the Regional Master Plan. When the legislature drew the line from preservation to planning area, there were 20 centres in the Highlands region, and this is the map that is in your Highlands Regional Master Plan of those 20 centres. At this point, there is only one centre in the Highlands which has not expired, and that is the Byron Centre. It expires May 19th, and so those centres expired under the state plan. I want to make that clear, not under the Highlands plan, but expired under the state plan. So a municipality in the planning area has an opportunity to go to the State Planning Commission for centre designation, or through plan conformance, as appropriate in your regional master plan, to come to the Highlands Council for a centre designation. The centre types are the same as those in the State Development and Redevelopment Plan. You can look at a regional centre, a town centre, a village centre, or a hamlet centre. These are all set forth in the State Plan. There are also state plan urban centres. Of those, interestingly enough, Jersey City and North get their water, those urban centres get their water from the Highlands region. The regional centres are generally those larger centres, they're population centres, they're often county seats, business centres. An example of a regional centre is Newton. A town centre, a smaller sub-centre, again, traditional centres of commerce and government, the core of commercial services and employment. the village is a smaller type center, generally in more of the rural areas. It's compact, generally has more residential, bigger residential component to it, with the types of services provided are more like neighborhood type services. And according to the state plan, rural villages should be surrounded by natural areas. Now these descriptions again come from the state plan. And then the hamlets are those little areas, generally speaking, the crossroads in rural areas, where you're supporting the existing character. Often it might be something like a general store and a couple of buildings, maybe a municipal complex, but those are those hamlet-type centres. We have in the regional master plan many policies and objectives, and I just call these to your attention. This PowerPoint will, as is our customary habit, be posted on the website. But this is just a focus on the fact that centre designation was contemplated in the regional master plan, and looking again at the necessity to comport with the Act to pull your development into those areas in or adjacent to areas already where there's already developed areas. Now let's look at the case of Byron Township. Byron is a 14,505 acre township, and 98% of it is in the preservation area. 2% is in the planning area. They have that existing centre. And as part of their plan conformance for Byron Township, they have at this stage submitted there for the planning area as well, based on a request for a centre. And the 2% is indeed their existing centre. This shows you a map of Byron. Again, you see the boundaries here in red, right there, and you see the preservation area shown in green. This is the planning area of Route 206. Here it is, and it is their existing centre. An aerial view of it, you see some already developed areas, and you do see some still natural areas that just goes up Route 206. Another map showing you our protection zone here, and these areas of existing community, and again the centre is roughly in this area here. That's more of the existing, sorry, of the landscape building zone mapping. This shows you impervious surface areas, so you can see here there's a quarry up here. Again, the developed area around here, a lot of Byron Township, as you can see, is very much in its natural state. And here is the state plan map. This is a 2001 state plan area, the designated corridors and centres. This again is the centre area. This is parkland here, rural and agricultural type planning areas under the state plan. Existing a priority open space, it's important to see this. Byron, we have 19,000 acres of what we term our special environmental zone, which is the area which according to the Highlands Act you are required to designate as where no building shall occur, that's the language from the Act. And the majority of that happens to be in Byron Township. There's a lot of preserved open space within the municipality already. We were required under the Act to do priority areas for conservation. You see them here. These are from the regional master plan. The dark are our high priority areas showing already preserved land. And here you see medium priority. So an awful lot of Byron is either preserved or considered as a priority for preservation. Look back in time, 1930, sometimes when we show these slides, there's a huge difference in Byron, some of the road networks and some developments around lakes, but obviously a lot of the natural area has remained natural since the last slide of 1930. Now, there's a long history for this centre in Byron. Their smart growth plan of 2002 included a two-phase mixed-use development and redevelopment town centre approach that met COA's obligations, or their COA obligations. It identified a village centre of approximately 60 acres as their core development area. And their two phases, their first phase was mixed-use, addressed their COA around 22 obligations of 44 units, and included townhomes, civic uses, and a max of 110,000 square foot non-residential uses. They had a contractual sewer agreement for 40,000 gallons per day from the Met Council Sewage Authority, So they have reserved that capacity to serve that center, that phase one. They also had a phase two, 94 single-family homes, which was to be based on future sewer availability. Included in their plan was a revitalization of the Route 206 corridor, pedestrian, trail, and bike features. And as has been the practice in Byram, because they've been very environmentally aware and protecting their environment, they recognize the Lovers Run protection area as their greenway project. This map here shows you the State Planning Center of 2002, shown outlined in red. So that is what we're, their center as it exists today. You see in the center here, the village core is in this area here. This pink area is to be developed in under this plan, and the green area, this is the Lovers Run area down here, this green area would have been preserved in that 2002 center. That's what was considered. Here's, again, look back in time. This is their smart growth plan of 2002. And this is, again, to show you their investment, because this is part of what you said you would look at in terms of adjustments and center designations, looking at the history of the town and the investment and the work it has put into its own center. So you see here, again, in that core village area back in 2002. Then they did their Byram Village Center conceptual layout. Here you see Route 206. Here you see Lackawanna Drive, and you see that development laid out that they had intended as their smart growth plan back in 2002. They then went to a form-based code alternative design in August of 2008, and this allows more flexibility in your approach and your setbacks to make it, again, consistent with the character of their community, and allows them to change and not be a very, very strict, including approach to planning, allows them more flexibility. And again, you see 206 here, you see Lackawanna Drive here, Lovers Run down here, and you can see the village core and their plan to address the kind of development they anticipated building here. They've had years of sound local planning. They've done a lot of visioning, a lot of community support for their center. They had that sewer contract to make sure that they reserved the capacity. They were meeting their COA obligations, which became a vital component of planning for Byram. They did take into consideration environmental and resource protection, and they did want to, of course, meet the needs for an economic viable center in their own community. The process resulted in that conceptual form-based code zone map for the village, and the entire planning area land was studied and shown as either developable, redevelopable, or resource protection areas. They also included, and our work with them had to look at the approved Department of Transportation projects, which are the improvements and the necessity of stormwater, et cetera, for their DOT project on Route 206. Looking at steep slope areas, Highlands Open Water Buffers, the Lovers Run area, prime groundwater recharge areas, and critical habitats. What we did is we worked with them on their planning, and Chris Janis, one of our principal planners, has taken lead on center designation, and she worked with Paul Gleas on this, to highlight that and Tina work, but Chris has taken lead on them on center designation, and I think it's been an exciting project to work as planners to planners on them, and attempting to make sure that we please the mayor and the chairman of the planning board and the governing body. So the plan we're going to come to let you look at today to show you its development from when we started working with Byram very closely on the center-based approach. And they continue to have a relationship with the State Planning Commission as well, because this is critical to them in terms of whether they go through conformance of planning area or not, because they want their center designation either working with us or working with the State Planning Commission. So this is what we were looking at when we started working with them in January of 2010. And the different uses are, I'm going to put it on this map, because we wanted to pull it out a little and look at the land contextually. And you can see here, they're putting single family homes in this area. They're putting two family townhomes in this area. Civic uses up here. This lab was also protected down here. You see that would be retail use of apartments in here and parkland here. This was an area where the DOT was going to be working on improvements to the road. And what we were looking at in working with them is we want to consider this at a bigger level and looking at the areas of critical importance for preservation within the preservation area that are contiguous to this. So we looked at adjacent developed areas, again consistent with the Act mandates to have development occur in or adjacent to already existing developed areas. So you see here development. This is them, for those of you who know Byron, the Wild West site, this area here. This is Wild West City. This, however, is the developed portion of that city. The remainder area here, interestingly enough, is, and I'll be showing you a map of that in a second, it is a special environmental zone. The characteristics of this are so critical for protection that it is part of those 19,000 acres that you designated in consistent with the Highlands Act as high, deserving the highest level of protection. It is in the preservation area, so obviously it's very limited, but it's certainly an area that the regional master plan would like to see as the highest priority for protection. And so we were looking at continuity to this area here. You can see it would be developed portion here, preserved land here. Our concern always is the more contiguous you can make the preservation, the better it is. And this is a map showing you Highlands Open Water Buffer. So you've got the Lovers Run, you've got protection down here. But we see here again, we see open water buffers here, we see developed area here. So in working, when the planners put their heads together to work on this, see if they come up with something that really met the objectives as best we could of the regional master plan and met the needs of Byron Township. But Byron Township was looking at, and remember, they're only focusing on phase one now where they have the capacity to support it. They left phase two out of this conversation. So here you see this is reconfigured, and it's reconfigured to allow for the exact same number of units and development that Byron wanted for this town centre. But looking now at the developed area, those single family homes are all moved into this area, the two family homes here, civic uses here, parkland here, all close to the already developed areas here. So the preserved open space then becomes a much larger contiguous area, contiguous with that special environmental zone and with the Highlands open water buffer. So the centre that you see back there in 2002, if you look at it again and you see what was slated to be developed there and preserved, would look like this as part of the planned conformance application for a centre if Byron approves of the work that has been done. This the governing body and their planning board would show that the developed areas will be here, the protected area here, again allowing for greater contiguity to other open space lands, which of course we hope to preserve under the special environmental zone. That brings us to the end of your consideration of central designation. What Byron Township is looking for from you is some indication of what the council, you know, and giving your staff direction as well as to how this would proceed, because it will determine whether Byron will continue to consider site conformance for their planning area.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, as just for edification purposes, everyone knows that Dover's kind of built out, if you will. However, recognizing if we were one of the first, if not the first, in New Jersey to get into form-based codes and how to implement smart growth and so on, I'd just like to read four or five important bullets that I'm of the opinion that Byron has conformed to. And I want to congratulate you because I know what kind of work it takes to go from 2002 to 2010 and the amount of interaction and thought that has to go into that form-based code. Zoning districts, form-based codes are defined around districts. Neighborhoods and corridors were confidential zoning districts bear no relationship
the transportation framework in a larger area. The regulatory focus is form-based codes de-emphasize density and use regulation in favor of rules for building form. They recognize that uses may change over time, but the building may endure. The uses form-based codes emphasize mixed use, and a mix of housing types to bring destinations into close proximity to housing and provide housing choices that meet individual needs. I believe that by our own land, the interaction that we must have had with the public from 2002 to 2010 probably mirrors the public input that we had in Dover as well. And a design-focused public participation process is essential to facilitate the movement that I saw on this slide from 2002 to 2010. So I embrace your efforts and I embrace the concept. Well,
I'd also like to commend the island staff and the township of Island for coming up with a very good plan. I think I don't agree with what the speaker said before about protecting critical habitat and junk. If with this plan you protect the critical habitat, serve the state, and also have economic development, so I think on the whole basis, and I think
Mr. Chairman, two separate questions. Number one is, should we be looking at centers? I kind of look at centers as something that fight for, set of rules for. And granted, and I think that it's more like your automobile. You register your car every year, and just take the money, move on. However, you do have an obligation for inspection to make sure that playing by the rules. And State Planning Commission, and what we're going through now, our centers are not being automatically redesignated. We can't say, yes, we want this to continue as a center. I think that's a critical part of a rule where if we have gone through a center, we've met the rules and regulations, that we should not have to be going through hurdles on a constant basis. And I recommend that this council make it as easy as possible to designate. Secondly, I think that the council has an obligation, has done a very good job in this particular instance, of trying to take that center and assist the municipality in meeting not only their goals, however, the goals of the And I think that this is an excellent example where I think that we should grant the center designation rather generously. However, I thank the township for working with council to come up with an improved and enhanced plan that we're all going to have. And I think that's really a good way for everyone. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just have to say it's no secret firemen have been steadfast in their determination to see this through since 2002. As our director mentioned, 98% of the preservation area, we talk about a vital for our township to survive and exist. I think this is paramount that the center is moved and they move forward so that they continue in the efforts they have made. And this is probably one of the bright spots of all the work that we've done from this council from day one. It's encouraging to see that they're from the municipal level, they're professionals and municipal leaders and our professionals and our staff here, that these are some of the bright spots that we all can take claim for, that we've done something good to
implement good planning practices to provide for both residential and commercial development while preserving critical habitat areas. And I think it's a tremendous job, and I think we'll take it to zero conversation.
I have an observation at the end of the question. This is definitely an example of good planning. It's about time that we got around to doing this. My question is there any thought given to make this a TDR receiving zone? And if so, can we give some flexibility to what we're looking at here as far as density? Well, if it does become a receiving zone, the perfect place to do it. And I think it would be appropriate to entertain that concept.
Well, in terms of capacity, this it caps the capacity. They have the capacity to support this. So to consider extra density, they don't have currently the capacity. That was the difference between phase one and phase two. I just want to recognize their attorney is here, their administrator is here as well, and their professional planner and the chairman and the mayor. And probably I don't know if there's many else while I'm here.
I think that the benefits that it can become to receive it don't far exceed any test that we might put on it, because you know we have to come around to make an STR thing work. And if we don't, if we get too rigid, it's going to be just a testament to failure. So what I'm saying is that we need to have the flexibility. If someone throws that into the mix and say, well, you know, you said 140, so now if you make it that, we're going to be 160 or 150. We have to be able to at least entertain that.
I think that gets to what Mayor Holtway was saying about revisions into the future, because the way we saw such designation here for the pilots was not an expiration, but that they would be revised when the master plan was being revised at the local level, or when the Highland Council was revising its plan. And if at that point extra capacity existed, one could consider something. But currently it is the wastewater capacity that is capping the center-based development. They have the reserve in order to service this development. But they don't have any other capacity for consideration of extra density at this point in time. But I get your point.
And I think that, you know, wastewater or whatever, I mean, you know, that drives me nuts sometimes when they talk about this stuff, because that's a limiting factor on other things that could make this whole thing more successful. You know, so we have to be able to live with that and make the changes.
When the capacity, so we have to live within the Highland Act, which also said that we have to do capacity-based planning. So
make a figure for a treatment plant, whatever.
I just want to point out that it's capped because it's in the preservation area, and you can't extend the mixed-use permit, so it's part of the law. So there's no way that we can extend
it. If the law is designed to make this not work, then change the law.
Well, you can go back to the legislature and argue about the act. The act says our plan and our law.
I think we have to put away the thing that we're carving stuff in granite and have the ability to be realistic and survive this and still make it work.
There are certain things that we need to follow that are based in the law and the plan that was adopted, however. I agree with you on that, and this caps the wastewater, so there's no way we can have flexibility or make a receiving area in this very sensitive preservation area. I think they've done a great job in reconfiguring, but the staff is to be congratulated, the town is to be congratulated. Certainly they've kept back from the Highland Open Water, that they've done what they could to get away from the steep slopes. They've reconnected the forest area and that very special ecosystem that with the forest area. Tremendous effort here. But certainly to make this a receiving zone for TDR is totally inappropriate based on our regulations.
Right.
Luckily, that's not before us today.
Is it necessary for your suggestion to follow up or to get yourself involved?
Thank you for all the kind words. You spoke as a firearm, a professional.
And also I want to reiterate all the good work that the Highlands and Islands staff did. There was a lot of people involved in this. There was countless hours spent on this. Paul has done an outstanding job. George, our planning board chairman, has spent many hours on this, fighting it, you know, embracing it, fighting it again. And I don't know how he stands on it right now, but you know, you can see the hard work that was put into this, and I think it's a good thing for Byron. I'm very excited about it. And, you know, we'll bring it back to our planning board and our town council, and, you know, we'll see what happens. So we, you know, we appreciate all the kind words.
Thank you. And I think that last point was critical to remember that this is not a done deal. This is not a decision that we're making today that is going to put an end to this process, but it's another step along the way.
That's right.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to open this question for public comment at this point, but there will be a public comment.
Okay, thank you all very much. Maybe you want to still want to go forward? Or are you okay?
It's
okay to ask. Okay, thanks again. Thank you all for coming up here and listening to this. Thank you, council members. I've been very diligent and I appreciate the exchanges. I sense council that is probably attentive to detail and refreshing because of so many new members and new perspectives on the conditions. It's not the same old, same old. So it's really hard to me to see the evolution of this process. Any other comments from the council members before I open the meeting to the public? In which case, we will do that. Okay, this is now open to the public to speak to the council. If anyone wants to do that, please identify yourself.
I'm Julia Thomas. I'm the Executive Director of the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. This is a fascinating meeting today because you're going to be doing an awful lot of this work going forward. Redevelopment, adjustments, these are going to be so key to the future work of the Highlands Council. So it was really rewarding to see the amount of attention to trying to achieve the goals that you've put in the regional master plan and the time that's put in. I recognize it's hard sometimes for the guinea pigs because, you know, going first, they're setting the model for what follows. And there are some important precedents that are being set here today. Personally, I find Byron very exciting, so I congratulate everybody on what they have been doing in Byron. For Hacong, there were just a couple of issues that I wanted to raise. In an ideal world, EAI wouldn't be there, but this is what we have to deal with. The project has a tortuous history, as you realize, I think, from what Mr. Bamish told you, and from what was presented by Eileen. But this is a huge improvement on where it is. But I was asking myself, as you went through your presentation, how do you achieve no net loss? Well, my colleague pointed out to me that you achieve no net loss by not farming for corn and returning this site to a site for grassland species. I don't know, because I don't think I've heard it said, that this area is a natural heritage priority site for grassland birds. It is a relatively small area in the state. It is almost unique. Returning this site to agriculture, but agriculture that melds with appropriate land use and agriculture that will encourage grassland species is possible. It's absolutely possible. The New Jersey Audubon Society is now proving that in several places in the state. So agriculture is not going to be stopped on this site. Just certain types of agriculture might be limited. So Mr. Francis, when he said that in Europe that this is done over and over, that is correct. Compromises are made. but we gain a great deal in the future as we go forward, and we certainly would on this site from what had been proposed. So that was all I wanted to say, but I want to thank the staff particularly for the huge amount of effort that's gone into these two issues. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Helen Heinrich. I'm on Jersey Town Bureau. It has been very fascinating to me, and I'm hoping you'll have more working sessions. But in terms of the Pohatcom project, it seems to me with the Borealis, we have a similar situation, and I believe you told us that in these cases where the land was in the ag resource area, that the Department of Agriculture would be consulted. And it seems if that had happened, some of these questions that you have about whether, you know, the values that are legitimate here would have been answered. And I know this project is one that's been in the pipeline, but I guess we request that any project that you're dealing with that's got ag in the ag resource area, that be involved to give you basic information for the rest of you to consider. And what Kurt said about no net loss of agriculture is something we said since, you know, the act was passed. If you're going to support agriculture, you've got to consider it valuable. One thing you haven't been told is that in Pohatcom there is a huge farm that was bought for grassland habitat. I'm not sure where it is in relation to the project, but it's not that it is very desperate need of it in Alaska. So please, from now on, involve the department, get the facts in agriculture, because we're going to ask these questions. There were posts to the township. I took ones I'd like to address today. First of all, was the comment earlier about this being smart planning and the many congratulatory comments regarding environmental planning. I'd like to, in connection with Pohatcom, note that this is a very expensive process, which may not necessarily be smart if it's not available to everybody. That process was available to a developer, a 500-unit developer, was extremely expensive and not available to the average landowner. In connection with Byron, please recall that Mr. Olson was quoted in the newspaper as complaining that the planning process, I believe, just in the past year, had cost over $100,000, and that's just in the last year, and that they had expected to get land grants or municipality grants to reimburse the Byron taxpayers for this $100,000, and there was much whining in this article about how that money might not be forthcoming. All this wonderful planning in Byron was predicated on the idea that the New Jersey taxpayers would pay probably something approaching $40 million of non-Byron money to design that small plant. So I think when we are talking about this planning, it is very important to consider the cost underlying it and whether that is feasible going forward, whether it's sustainable, and whether it really is smart growth to spend other people's money on such a plan. I'd now like to address this whole question of grasslands, because the idea that returning grasslands to bird habitat with a nice bambi feel seems to be developed by somebody sitting in an office, maybe without windows, and it completely collides with the reality of caring for land and grassland. For those that don't know me, I run an operating farm. It's a real farm. It's not a hobby farm, and I care for 68 acres of land. There is no such thing in New Jersey today as letting grasslands go back to bird
habitat grasslands without active annual management. Right now, some federal money subsidies come to do that. Federal money subsidies going to come to manage our grasslands in perpetuity? Probably not. We certainly aren't going to have state money for that. You cannot just let grasslands go natural. Go walk around the Duke Estate and see what happened when the Greeny Foundation of that organization decided to go natural. You get thickets of brambles and elianthus and Canadian thistle and Russian olive and brambles. It's a mess, and birds don't like that mess. That's what happens. We are in a new world. There's an invasive species report out. Invasive species is the most serious environmental issue facing our country. It's not clean water. It's not all the stuff that you talk about. It's not the birds and the bees. It is the invasive life. And in order to keep that invasive life back, it is a daily battle. The idea in it, something you don't really understand here, I'm sorry Mr. Austin is gone, it is the farmers who actively care for this land that keep that threat at bay right now. And what you are doing here is trying to eliminate agricultural land where people are actually, one, earning a living, as Kurt tried to explain, although that seemed to go over a lot of people's heads, as well as really taking care of the most serious issue confronting us. So this idea of putting grasslands back into some natural habitat will cost you a fortune over time to maintain that grassland annually. It makes absolutely no sense. Do not have plans that require these grasslands, because people that own that land over time are not going to put that kind of money in. It's far, far too hard. It's too expensive. It's not an economic viability that goes with it. And I noticed Ms. Fawn looking at the floor throughout my comments because she knows I'm right.
Wayne Fry, the Jersey Conservation Foundation. What Ms. Post said about grasslands requiring positive maintenance is, I believe, accurate. But I would like to point out that there are federal programs, I believe one is called WIP, Wildlife Habitat Incentive Program, and those funds have recently increased in the agriculture appropriations bill. So there are means to provide the landowner with funding for actually doing these kinds of enhancements. And I would point out, as was also mentioned by Julia Summers, that the site in Fulacom is part of a natural heritage priority site that was designated by the state. And there are actually at least 7 threatened and endangered species that use that site, not just the upland sandpiper. There are bobolinks, there are several species of rare sparrows, there are overwintering short-eared owls, and I believe kestrel, another raptor species which use the site in the winter. And part of this larger natural heritage priority site is actually being managed for summer grasses by the Phillipsburg Riverview Organization. And part of it is owned by the state Fish and Wildlife, and I believe part of it is still owned in private ownership, and some of that is undoubtedly also farmed for corn, I believe. The situation has changed. I was out there a while ago and took photographs, and what I was photographing was actually corn. But one of the requirements, as I understand, with the grassland birds I'm sure that they were only missed in the grassy areas, but they also feed and so forth, and they require areas where there are not trees or buildings that extend way above the ground. And I believe that is because the raptors perch in the trees and then attack the nests which are on the ground. But so it's, I am not a wildlife expert, but I believe there can be a mixture of farming agriculture and grassland, and it can accommodate the species. But I did want to point out that there are many more species there than have been mentioned thus far, and that the Powhatan site is the northernmost part of the designated National Heritage Priority site.
Not to beat this issue to death, but I did hear both sides of the conversation, many sides of the conversation regarding agricultural uses and habitat, and I agree with Mr. Francis and Julia and others that these two things can coexist. I think that's a lot of times it's the agricultural land that provides the habitat. So I just wanted to leave it that it's not one or the other. I think there's a way to do both. There's biologists on staff at the NRCS. Like Wilma mentioned, there are federal programs that provide money to create habitat, maintain habitat, as well as actively farm. So I just wanted to leave with everyone to know that these things can happen together. It doesn't have to be one or the other. It might be some wordsmithing that needs to take place with Powhatan, maybe not call out specifically grassland species, maybe talk about habitat protection as part of the farm conservation plan, but I think these things can be resolved. So that's my comment. And congratulations to Byron and others. It's nice to see an active, creative look at some of these development plans and what's happening. I think this is obviously part of the RMP is the planning. It's a master plan for planning as well as preservation. So it's really nice to see the planning aspects happening and trying to keep everyone's goals in mind. So thank you very much.
David Schroff, I have a farm in Lebanon Township. First, let me report on what the Water Supply Authority did and my suggestion in increasing the water rates for land preservation in the Highlands area. They decided to keep the water rates the same, $231 a gallon, which is cost. Almost on the heels of this approval was a request for rate increase by New Jersey American Water Company, a company formerly owned by the Germans and now is all American, for 13.6%. And this is on top of a already granted water rate increase of about 3 years ago. So they're getting water at cost on my back, which I contend is not cost because I'm paying four times as every other landowner in the Highlands area. So that's what another state agency has done. I've solved your grassland problem because corn is grass. And so when you plant corn, you are planting grassland habitat. Rice is a grass. All kinds of things are grass. You want to plant a really fine grass, plant bamboo. That can grow 16 inches a day. And if you cut hay, the kind of grass you're talking about, if you cut hay in July, it's not hay anymore. It is, as Kurt says, mulch hay at best. The time to cut grass, by grass I mean orchard grass, timothy, etc., is the very end of May, the very beginning of June. That's the prime time. And I've also offered to this council in the past newspaper articles demonstrating that peregrine falcons can and do nest in church steeples. Particular church steeple that I talk about was one that the newspaper reported on was in Elizabeth. And when I asked you to, because of the peregrine falcons have proved that church steeples are not just potential habitat, but real habitat for peregrine falcons, when I asked you to protect the peregrine falcons' potential habitat by declaring a 1,000-foot buffer around every church steeple in the state, you did not. When I brought to your attention peregrine falcons nesting in electrical transmission lines, and suggested that you make electrical transmission lines not just potential habitat, but actual habitat for falcons, what did you do? Some of you fought the transmission lines being run into New Jersey from Pennsylvania, tooth and nail. You're denying peregrine falcons potential habitat in so doing. What this illustrates to me is that some of you are less adaptable than peregrine falcons to the 21st century. Most particularly, Tracy Carluccio, and the batch of Luddites we had sitting over here. This is the 21st century. Peregrine falcons can adapt. So should you be able to do. And when you talk about funds for grasslands and stuff like that, what you're talking about these days, particularly at the federal level, but also at the state level, is a significant fraction of those funds being borrowed money. How much money do you want to borrow, and what do you want to use it for?
No.
Well, sometimes you do and sometimes you don't. And this is one of the times you don't, apparently.
I'm giving you a little more leeway than I usually do because I know you like to run on.
Well, everybody likes to run on, it seems. I've heard running on by all kinds of people, including you.
Thank
you. Now you've interrupted my train of thought. Was that your intention? Okay, let me conclude by saying I've been tracking the people who voted for this bill way back when it passed in 2004 and comparing the senators and assemblymen who can now add to the resume the fact that they are convicted felons. And they have voted 100% consistently for the Highlands Act. So if you want to determine legislative intent, I suggest you ask a convicted felon. That concludes my remarks.
Yes, I've heard a lot about... I'm sorry. Hal Danielson, I'm a property owner in Hampton, New Jersey, rural Hampton, in Hunterdon County. I've heard a lot about critical habitat, protected wildlife, and I've looked over the threatened endangered species that we have here, and we only have a couple. The rest are federal. The rest are the rural state. The bog turtle, for example. You have drawn the line with what we normally have done as farmers and landowners. You should leave them alone. They went along their way, and we went along our way. I've asked them to pay taxes and help me out financially. And every turtle I talk to, you know, I just don't give you a straight answer. But at any rate, we have Cummings Milne Burby, which happens to be the bog turtle. Well, we should start as landowners making some money off of them. the money that you can get for one of these turtles is about $2,500 on the pet market. That's what they're going for. The wood turtle, $350. I have old cookbooks showing the fishes and things like that. Why not cook them and eat them? And this will be coming up. The farmers are threatened by these, well, we shall say, threatening endangered species as to what they can do with the property. So instead of living with these creatures, what we should do is start eliminating them. One species by one species. Salamanders make excellent bass bait. Let's sell them to the bass fishermen down south. They love them. And we can go right on down the list to remove these threatened and endangered species from our areas. And as my friend Dave Shoup said, if you want grassland, go plant bamboo and see what that will do for you. You haven't designated exactly what you want, and the farmers up there, you're giving them a hell of a hit already because they don't have the equity in their properties anymore. It's more difficult for them to go out and get funds for planting, new equipment, whatever. You folks are destroying the agricultural business that you said that you wanted to preserve. It's having the reverse effect. Not only that, but there have been several corporations that have left New Jersey. We're not doing anything to attract businesses in here. And things like the DEP and the Highlands as well has kept businesses out of this area. There'll be a lot coming down about this, both scientifically and otherwise, that it was nothing more than what it really is, a land grab. The critical areas for water have been overlooked, because that's right in Bob Smith's territory. There was legislation introduced on that to stop growth and to put in a saltwater plant, because the salt water is coming into that area so greatly. Down in that area, the cones of the depression from their wells are approximately 92 feet below sea level. What are we doing down there to stop growth? Nothing. Go ahead. Build as much as you want down there. Drill. Do what you want. Salt water comes in, fine. Let it come in. We don't care. We'll be out of here. And that's what you have with senators like Bob Smith and people like that. They really don't care. As long as it's not in their neck of the woods. If the same legislation was introduced down there to protect a critical water supply, you'd hear screaming like you've never heard before. That's about all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.